Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freundo, Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language, and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Listen.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of NVC. This is episode 534, I think. I'm sitting in for Casey, who's out on leave, and I brought with me some really awesome guests. You know, first of all, we've got Alana Pierce.
Hi, what's up?
Welcome, Alana. Ex-IGN, now out there doing something mysterious. We might hear more on that in the future. We've got the great Seth Macy.
You flatter me. Thank you.
From our studio in Maine. And then, of course, Zach.
Wow. No fanfare.
Welcome
at
back.
All. Just like, yeah. Okay. It's nice to see everybody. Alana, it's been a long time since I've seen you. It's great to have you back on the show.
It's been ages.
I don't even know when the last time I was on this show was.
Probably like
honestly.
2018, I would assume. Hang on one second. I got to shut my door.
That seems about right. Okay.
Let's all watch.
And this is how I get treated. He just goes and shuts his door.
All right. Well, we're super professional here. Let me go over the topics today so you know what's coming up. Obviously, it's a really busy day for everybody. So I appreciate that you guys even joined because the PlayStation 5 is coming out. And that is going to be one of our topics, not the PS5 and the Xbox being out, but how will Switch fare against the new next-gen consoles. And then we'll have a look at what Nintendo has planned for Black Friday, which is just around the corner. And we'll talk about the latest games. There are actually 29 new games out in the next week. and will tell you the very much smaller number of games you should actually pay attention to. Anyway, with that out of the way, let's jump right into the show. So yes, it is the beginning of Generation 9, the ninth generation of consoles. And I wanted to just go through a little bit of history before we get into it. So I'm not going to ask anybody's age here, but Generation 1 kicked off in 1972, and I was barely born. I was born in 1971, and the very first console was the Magnavox Odyssey. That kicked it off. But I actually have one of the Generation 1 consoles right here.
Of course.
So this is, you won't notice any name on it, but if you look at the back, there's a Japanese word, and it says Nintendo on the back. And so that's the TV Game 6. It's got built-in games. Guess how many?
Three. How could anyone know?
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Anyway, that was Generation 1. So that kicked things off, and Nintendo was already there. And every other company that was in Generation 1, I think there were like some hundreds of different consoles back then. They're all gone. Generation 2 was in 1976. That was my first console generation that I participated in as a young lad. I think we got ours in like 1977. That was a Fairchild Channel F, the German version. But Generation 2 is also the one that had the Atari 2600, Intellivision, Vectrex, which I'm happy to own one too. Anybody
that's where I participate? Jumped in.
What was your first machine?
Damn, you guys are old.
Yeah, I'm 1977 was the year that I was born, actually. So yeah, I'm old as hell. But it was
Star Wars.
The first and Kanye. The first system that we owned.
Go hand in hand. Sorry.
Was the ColecoVision, which was created by, of course, the Connecticut Leather Company. But the first system that I played was the Atari 2600. And I remember playing it very distinctly at somebody's house. I don't remember who it was. I just remember being like, this is my jam now. This is what I want to do forever. And look at me now.
And then Seth and I worked really hard on Killing Gaming so that nobody else would be able to experience it afterwards. So that was almost the end, right? That was the big console crash with the Atari 2600, the famous ET cartridges buried in the landslide. But oh no, Phoenix Rising. Generation 3 was in 1983. And that was, of course, the Famicom and the NES. Anybody jump in there? Not yet.
That is, well, look, I am still not alive, but the first console that I played on was the NES. So I guess I just.
Okay.
But not born yet.
Nice. So then fourth generation Super NES Genesis.
Oh, man.
That's got to be Zach Ryan, no?
So I played a lot. Pear was actually teasing me like a playground bully yesterday because he messaged me and was like, hey, what was your first console? And the first console that I owned was a PlayStation. This is a story that I've told on the show before, but the first console that I owned was a PlayStation. I had a Game Boy, and then I went back and played like Super NES and Genesis, and I had friends that had SNES and Genesis. So that was like the first like game, like the first actual home console that I remember playing on was an NES, but I didn't own a console in my own house until PlayStation.
So that still means you were part of Generation 4 then. And then Generation 5, you already said it, PlayStation, N64, Saturn, Jaguar. Generation 6,
I'm sorry,
was Dreamcast.
What? Saturn and what?
Jag. Atari Jag.
can you say the full name for me? Can you?
Jaguar.
Jaguar
came out in February.
Jaguar.
Say that. Oh, you guys say Jaguar.
Yeah.
Oh,
Jaguar.
That.
No, okay. Pear is right. It's Jaguar.
Oh, thank you.
Jaguar
will be on pretty evenly split on this one.
Nope.
So Generation 6, Dreamcast, PS2, GCN, GameCube, Xbox. Generation 7, Xbox 360, PS3, Wii, and then things get unwieldy. Even back in the early days, generations overlapped a bit. Like, you couldn't clearly cut them. And so things got a little bit weird with Generation 7, where, you know, Wii U was almost an extension of the Wii, but we count it as the first Generation 8 console. And then, confusingly, we call Switch the last Generation 8 console, even though it's in the same generation with the Wii U. You guys okay with that?
I don't know. I tend to lump generations like iteratively, right? So whenever the next iteration of a thing is, that's where I put it in place. So PS3, PS4, I'm sorry, PS3, Xbox 360, Wii U, like those are all of one generation to me. And I think Switch kind of falls in line with the Xbox One and PlayStation 4 generation. That's just where I align it, because I was playing those systems when the Switch launched. So
the tough part is, yeah, definitely the timing, right? The Switch came out earlier than these machines. And then that it also, it's a replacement for Nintendo's handheld machines, which always sat aside the kind of full console generations. But yeah, so for the...
I consider the Switch to be part of any generation at this point. I like, it's like a thing that's doing its own thing, and it truly is. I mean, I feel like... Mario Kart, what is it called? Live or Tour? The most recent one.
Yeah,
Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah. Tour. Yeah. Home Circuit.
I feel like that's... Yeah, Home Circuit, that's it. I feel like it's just an example of how they just do their own stuff. And always have. Nintendo's always been about innovation and play, I think. But I feel like right now, except especially, they are just very much trying to create experiences that the other two hardware manufacturers are not, to the extent that I feel like it feels weird to even group them together. Also, it's weird because I'm like, where does Breath of the Wild sit as game of the generation? Does it compete with Xbox One and PlayStation 4, or does it compete with the next cycle? I don't. That's too confusing for me.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a great point, actually.
Sorry, gets worse.
I totally misunderstood. I thought you were talking about the mobile Mario Kart.
That's probably where my brain also got confused on the name. But I haven't. Yeah. I haven't actually played that. It looks so cool. But again, it's just something that the other two aren't doing, and Nintendo just does their own thing, and I love them for it.
Yeah, I think seeing Switch as a generation buster is really interesting, because it most definitely is the beginning of a line of Switch machines, just like there were DSIs, right, there or 3DS, 2DS, different iterations on that machine. Whereas, like, you know, the next PlayStation will be PlayStation 6, right? Whereas Xbox seems to be more leaning towards that Nintendo setup of iterative hardware. But anyway, let's get into Generation 9. So here we are. Everybody here has a new Xbox Series X?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
No, Seth doesn't yet. Everybody here has
Christmas. We got one.
What about PlayStation 5? Anybody?
I'm just waiting for my dogs to start barking. And you'll see me just jump out of my chair in the middle of the show. I'm just kidding. But no, it should be here. It's out for delivery.
Mine just arrived at Terry Schwartz's. I have to go pick it up from Terry's place. So it's there. Very nice. Excited. She sent me a text since we've been recording.
That's a famous restaurant in LA.
Terry Schwartz's.
Pasta Schwartz, yes.
Deli. Yeah. So let's get right into the topic. How do you think Nintendo Switch will hold up against this new generation of consoles? Obviously, you probably don't have much experience playing PlayStation 5 games, but you know what the games look like, and you've been following the coverage, and you've hopefully played your Xbox already. How will Nintendo survive in the face of the Xbox and PlayStation 5?
This meme, you know that meme where there's the girl walking and then there's the couple and the guy's looking back making the face?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I say I see this meme. I did make this one, actually, where I put on the explanation of the guy looking back, it's basically games I already own, but on Nintendo Switch. And then the girlfriend is games I own, because I think that's still a reality. It's like, I played Hades on PC and then I was like, and I've just been playing it on Switch ever since. And there are so many games that I feel like I want to play on the Switch organically, and I don't see that changing anytime soon, obviously, especially for indies who've seen tremendous growth and success in terms of sales on Switch, even for things that released many years later. And I just feel like that handheld appeal doesn't go anywhere. And that includes for games that are sort of recent, like Ori. Like the Ori games are things that I'm very happy to play on Switch, even if it means that I'm playing them again, though I do also love that they have Xbox achievement integration for some of those things. But like, I'm playing Minecraft on Switch more than anywhere else, so I feel like the appeal of that platform isn't lost, and maybe that's surely it's not me, but because I use it handheld primarily, nothing can compete with that comfort, really.
So that's a really interesting point. Obviously, the Switch offers handheld play, but we also live in a year where going on trips and being outdoors and out and about with your Switch isn't really that much of a reality for most people, right? So, like, I'm wondering, do you feel like that's impacted the Switch, or is it just immune, where, like, the portability factor isn't so much about travel alone, it's just, like, convenience. You can just play anywhere in your home. You don't have to, like, sit down in front of your TV on your couch. It's just, like, you're untethered with it.
I sometimes sit in bed and do it. If I'm between things, just have it on my desk. Like for a lunch break, that's what I was doing with Animal Crossing all the time. So when I'm assessing it, I'm like, I could have been playing it on a 4K TV this whole time, but I'm happy to not because I love the handheld device and it feels so good and clean. And I feel like that's especially compared to trying xCloud recently, which isn't even called xCloud anymore. They gave it also some very confusing name. But with any of the setups that they had, I was like, I did not realize or give enough credit to Nintendo for how well the Switch is designed as a handheld device and for how comfortable it is. When you try playing with like a controller and a phone or with, I think it's like the Razer add-on that they made for Android phones, like none of them are as comfortable as the Switch. So that kind of thing isn't even going to compete, which is, I feel like the more immediate competitor in the handheld space.
Yeah, and nothing wakes you up quite like a Switch when you fall asleep in bed playing it. That's got a real good satisfying thwack on your face. Or is that just me?
On the old face.
Oh, yeah.
Still never done
I've been
it.
Playing, I've been playing a lot of Pikmin. Before I go to bed, like that's just kind of my chill out and relax game before I go to sleep. And I am sad to admit that, yes, I've definitely dropped my Switch on my face more than once in the last like couple of weeks. Because it's so, just Alana, like, you such brought a chill up, game, you know?
Yeah. So Alana, you brought up Ori. I would say Ori is one of the show horse games on the Xbox Series X. Like when you get an instant upgrade, the game runs at, 120 hertz. It is ridiculously pretty on the Xbox. Even if you don't have 120 hertz TV, it's like 6K super sampled at 60 frames per second, and like the HDR, everything just pops.
And like, at the risk of being sounding unpopular here, I would go so far as to call that game a show Jaguar.
Thank you, Jaguar. Correct pronunciation. We appreciate it.
Thanks for helping with that. But like, so do you? I personally find it hard. Like I own it on the Switch as well, and I find it hard to motivate myself to play it on the Switch now that it's out on the Xbox, right? Because it is just visually, it's just such a step ahead. It's not to say that the Switch version is bad. It's like it's a really, really good port.
How much of that is dependent on you being at home, though? Like you said earlier, right? Like I feel like both Ori games, just knowing how like what kind of games you play on the Switch and how you typically like interact with that, like you used to travel a lot for work. I used to travel a lot for work and I would play a lot of games on the Switch. And I feel like if 2020 wasn't this like dumpster fire and we were still in a routine travel situation, like I feel like you would probably not look at Ori on the Xbox Series X because there are Assassin's Creed Valhalla's to play there, and you know, like all these other games that are engineered for that system, up-res for that system, and that Ori is the same experience on Switch as it is on Xbox, just like a little prettier, you know.
Can't be that way though, because there are so many people who don't travel who will still play on their Switch over playing on console. And I do think
I just meant pair specifically
in that's fair. Yeah. I do think the point with Ori is a good one, in that Will of the Wisps is a beautiful game that on a like a big screen 4K TV is just awe-inspiring. It's stunning, but it's still the kind of game where it was actually what I played this year was The Blind Forest. I replayed before playing Will of the Wisps on my Switch, and that just seemed like the right thing to do for whatever reason, but maybe that is in a lot of cases for games I already own. But I feel like, I don't know if you guys are the same. My brain has made a list of Switch games and other games, and I don't know how I've actually chosen the Switch games. Like, it was just very clear to me when I started playing Hades, this is a Switch game. I'm playing this on Switch, but I don't know why.
I think I think we all do that, right? It's the probably wouldn't play Assassin's Creed if Valhalla came out on the system. We probably wouldn't see that as a must buy on the Switch and play it on the consoles first. But yeah, any of these indie games, especially roguelikes, any games where the play experience is not like sitting there for 10 hours following a story, I instantly put in the Switch pocket.
I guess anything that's not overly cinematic, I think makes sense. And I'm trying to think if I were to pick the most cinematic game that I played on Switch, it's hard to even actually do that. Like
probably Breath of the Wild, right?
Any of the
core Nintendo games like Xenoblade or anything like that.
Yeah. It's probably Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
So, back, let's stay on hardware for a second before we talk about third-party support. But Do you think the current machine then cuts it, or do you feel like Nintendo is fast tracking or planning a hardware iteration next year? Do you think we'll see a more powerful Nintendo Switch next year? I mean, you can see power comes at a price, right? Like, you were talking, like, do you have your PS5 next to you, Zach? If you hold it up, it's almost the size of Zach, right? Like, power comes at a price. Do you think you can take
this on the road? Like, look, I'm playing it handheld right now.
Yeah.
This is fine.
That is a big sandwich.
Oh, man.
That's a big sandwich.
And so second part of that question, do you think the upgrade is going to be significant enough to actually matter in face of next gen, or is it basically more about making it easier for companies to port their older games to it?
I think that, and I've said it many times on the show, like, I definitely think we're going to get a Switch Pro next year. Like, I just feel like, I don't know why, I don't have any like real evidence to point me to this, but I feel very confident that we'll get something. In my wildest dreams, I think we get like a January reveal and a March release with Breath of the Wild 2. But I realize that that's like probably wishful thinking more so than anything. But I do think that Switch Pro is likely coming next year. And I think that it is, it'll run with a chipset that's comparable to base PS4 and Xbox One. And that will allow Ubisoft to put Assassin's Creed Valhalla on that system. It'll allow EA to put, you know, the modern versions of FIFA and not like rehashes of the previous year's Switch version of FIFA, right? Like, I guess it's, Seth's laughing, but that's like a big deal, right? Like,
No, I know. The absurdity of what they do with that is what made me laugh.
And I think that is probably more important from a third party perspective to Nintendo than, yeah, I mean, I think that that's probably like key to that business model working for Switch Pro.
Since you're playing Oracle, selfishly, I want to ask, do you think the new device will be a completely different form factor? Like, do I have to give up my my little Joy-Con?
What is
Or do you think it'll just be the core part will be more powerful?
That's a good question. Because here's the thing. Nintendo, like...
suck.
Like, I feel like, Zach, even if you're saying like, well, based on nothing, they're going to release another one next year. I also agree they will release another one next year. And I don't think it's based on nothing. It is on a history of repeatedly iterative consoles.
Yeah, for sure.
So they've done it for so long. And I also feel like in a lot of cases, Nintendo does want to make money with it. But the Joy-Con are already so expensive. And obviously, I've already had drift issues. I had Joy-Con drift for the first time this year after playing too much Animal Crossing. Yeah, thankfully, a friend of mine is very good at fixing them. He fixes everyone's drift. Awesome. So, yeah, I need
his number.
Very, very handy. He like rode up to me on a motorbike with his mask on, and we did an exchange. It was very cool. But, got it fixed. Yeah. But I feel like it would I can see Nintendo doing it because there are some business practices that they sometimes have that I just am so confused by, and sometimes I don't feel like it's the most consumer friendly. But I just feel like making us buy a new version of the Joy-Con, especially if it were at the same price, it just seems mean, especially when I think the lawsuit's still ongoing.
There's still a class action suit on it. Thank you, Alana. That gives me some confidence. I do not want to replace my fleet of Joy-Con. You guys didn't even notice that was that's a special edition Fortnite one.
Wow.
Big fan. That's actually pretty cool. Big fan of Fortnite, Per? Nice. You play a lot of Fortnite?
No, just a fan of Joy-Con and somewhat obsessed.
That's how they get it.
So you're absolutely right. Obviously, there's a long history of Nintendo iterating on their hardware. You know, whether it's upgrading slightly with components or releasing all new Pikachu N64s, obviously the one everybody wants. But so there's a related question to this from SOL from the IGN Nintendo board. You know, if you go to IGN, there's a whole set of forums you can hang out on with and chat with your friends. So he asks, does Switch need a price cut in response to the $399 PS5 digital edition if no Switch 4K version is planned? What do you think? I mean, we will talk about Black Friday a little bit later, and we know what the bundle will cost. Like, do you think Nintendo needs to cut the price in order to compete?
No, not at all. Nintendo, you can't even buy a Switch half the time. There's no lack of demand for the Nintendo Switch. They don't need to cut the price. They will still sell out in, you know, like a day whenever Amazon gets them. They are fine for now. Maybe a little down the road, sure. But for now, to compete with the $399 PlayStation 5 Digital that nobody can buy anyway, nah, they're completely fine. Those consoles aren't even on the radar of like regular people who don't, you know, play video games a lot. All anecdotally, anyone who's asking me for advice is asking me, hey, I want to get a Switch. Which one should I get? Hey, my kids are really into Switch and they want one. Which model, version, whatever should I get? Nobody's asking me.
And you tell them every time the Fortnite limited edition with the special Joy-Con.
Exactly. And the skin. I think it comes with a special skin.
Get that
out
of here.
Yeah, I don't have the Joy-Con. The dock has little Fortnite icons in the back of the Switch does too, but you can't actually buy that one in the US. That's a European and Australian New Zealand edition only so far. So there you go. Yeah, that's right.
I ultimately agree with Seth though. I don't think they need to do that, nor do I think they will. So I'm not sure about hardware because I just don't recall, but I feel like Nintendo almost never puts things on sale or discounts anything.
Right.
Like their games just never go on sale. Did the Wii U become cheaper after a period of time?
No.
Not that I remember.
Not even the Wii U.
Remember that one. So there was
a lot of supply and demand considerations to be taken in. So.
No, but you're absolutely right. Obviously, it seems like Nintendo has a little bit of that Apple protection going, where it's like, you know, an iPhone may not be more powerful than an Android phone, but it sure is more expensive, and it seems mm-hmm. like those things sell anyway, right? So there's a little bit of that factor. They did one time with a Nintendo 3DS launch, the 3DS sold slower than they expected. And so at that point, I think internally they said, we've priced this too high, and they had to adjust it. And they gave everybody the apology set of games.
Right.
The
like the Pioneers pack ambassador. Or something. Yeah. The ambassador program. That's right. Yeah.
So that, but you're right. That was the one time. And like the 3DS sold a little slow. Doesn't seem like the Switch has that problem, right?
No. Not even close.
Which would make sense, but otherwise I don't think they need to. You know, my sister isn't a huge gamer, but did grow up playing the Nintendo 64 with me, and just in the last few months has been like, I think I want a Nintendo Switch. Not a person who is up to date with consoles, but it's still somehow in her wheelhouse that she should get a Nintendo Switch and that there are games that she will enjoy on the Switch. So I feel like it's a thing that is still, even for people who aren't necessarily gamers who tried to get one day one like we did, that console still appeals to them more than trying to get an Xbox Series X or a PS5 does.
Makes mm-hmm. sense. So let's move on to games then. So we have a question from Angela Ray from the NVC Facebook group. If you're on Facebook, there's a wonderful little chat group. You have to apply to be let in by answering a very simple question, which totally doesn't
apply
matter.
Makes it sound yeah. so much more difficult mm-hmm. than it is.
Oh, it is. It is a club. You have to say
answer me these riddles three.
We've received your application for the Nintendo group, and we'll get back to you as soon as we can.
That's right. It's a tiny club of 10,000 people. So Angela Ray asked, since the next-gen consoles have finally arrived, do you think we'll start to see diminishing third-party support for the Switch if there ends up not being any sort of hardware revision or updates in the near future? Are we potentially looking at more and more streaming games like Control in an effort to try and keep up with third-party releases instead of a beefed-up version on the Switch? Being that the Switch is still selling so well, I'm not convinced that Nintendo is ready to do a hardware refresh yet. What do you guys think?
I think the answer to both questions is yes. You know, yeah. I think just by looking at development costs for developing an alternate version for the Switch or a dumbed down version for the Switch probably limits the amount of development that will happen for a console as it ages out, right? Like as they're creating stuff for bigger platforms, more powerful platforms, like I feel like that is just sort of a byproduct of that. The second part of his question was more streaming. And yeah. I mean, I think that's a viable option for some. My internet is terrible. So like, I would never try to stream a game to my Switch because I can barely download PS4 games that don't take like all day for me to do it. So,
really?
Oh God. Yeah. My internet sucks. I'll send you a screenshot I took this morning. It's embarrassing. I think the answer to both of his questions is yes.
I forgot what both of the questions are.
Yeah,
the first question was about third-party support, yes. And the second question was like, is streaming a more viable option?
Gotcha.
Because like Call of Duty is already not on the Switch, right? And this is now becoming... It used to be that Call of Duty was always on a Nintendo platform, even if it meant creating a lesser version, but it's right. we're done with that, right?
And a Call of Duty DS. Everybody
oh, yeah. on that. will we see... We didn't see Star Wars launch on the Switch either. So, I mean, I could imagine there being more streaming experiments if people liked how Control performed on their connections.
Maybe. My answer is sort of yes and no, because I think that everyone's in a difficult spot right now with Xbox especially promising backwards and forwards compatibility, so that hopefully developers are encouraged to make games on multiple platforms. And, you know, obviously that people are assuming, and I don't know that it's actually true, that the Cyberpunk being delayed again is because they are on so many platforms that people are having trouble making everything playable, and I know that is a huge feat, so it is, it's just my thought is that it's already something that people are having to consider. And with the Switch having such a strong player base, I think that there are choices to be made, but I don't think that anything necessarily changes immediately. Like, I feel like this is like a maybe in 2 years kind of thing where everything stops being developed for the Switch, not you know, tomorrow, because the PlayStation 5 is out. At which point I do imagine they will have new hardware to keep up with that, which again is really strange because I still don't feel like Nintendo are part of the same generation, but they're still at the whims of the same generation if they want that third party support.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, I imagine Nintendo cares more about some of the all ages games being present still, like the Lego series of games, than they care about a lot of the big core games. I think with the Wii, they've gained the confidence that they can go their own path, and they don't have to do what they tried with a GameCube to kind of stay on pace with Xbox and PS2. But if we look at... So what I'm hearing is that we do think third-party support is going to change a little bit, and that maybe Switch will become more or entirely about the games that you mentioned, Alana, the kind of the games we put in the Switch drawer, and then the first-party games.
Just Dance will be there until 2035.
That's true.
That actually is releasing this week, so very topical.
Right, not on Wii though. Sorry, folks.
Nope. So first one ever.
Just so you guys, here's the first party lineup that we know of. Nintendo's been pretty mum of what's coming after Q1 of next year. Good one. Hyrule Warriors: Age of Calamity is obviously coming in just a couple of days. There's Fire Emblem Shadow Dragon and the Blade of Light, which is not exactly a new game, an NES Famicom port from December 4th. There's Immortals: Phoenix Rising from Ubisoft. An example of a rare third-party game coming out at the same time. Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury, so Wii U remake February 12th. Bravely Default 2, February 26th. And then Monster Hunter Rise, March 26th. Casey, we're thinking of you. What do you guys think of this lineup? Do you think that's good? That's enough?
Yeah, solid.
Yep.
Solid, but not blown away.
Yeah, exactly. I think, you know, of the games that we talked about, you know, three are first party. Well, I guess four are first party, but only three of them are first party and new to the Switch. Right. You know, one is a port, two are ports. Like, look, Fire Emblem, Shadow Dragon, and Blade of Light, that's for dorks like us that are like Nintendo fans, Nintendo collectors. Like, I don't necessarily, like, you have this a major Switch releases, but like, I don't consider that a major release. I think that that's like such a niche thing. And Immortal Phoenix Rising, that game, for all intents and purposes, as much as I've seen of it, looks awesome, but like, I'm gonna play that on my Xbox, you know? Like,
you guys are pretty kind. Like, when I look at that lineup, I'm like, outside of Hyrule Warriors, like,
I don't feel like I was being
Bravely Default
kind,
Monster Hunter. Like, They're interesting games, but that's a pretty slim lineup.
Yeah.
If that's defining the future of Switch, and obviously it's not, right? They're working on more stuff. They're just not announcing it.
I guess when I'm looking at the like PS5 and Xbox Series X releases for right now, which is different because, you know, obviously the start of every generation is always a bit slim. Nintendo with that lineup is releasing more stuff over the same period of time. So comparatively, I'm like, pretty good, but I mean, yeah, nothing I'm blown away by. Do we have a release date for Pokemon Snap yet?
It's yeah, we No, it doesn't have a firm
date. No, no release
next year.
No, it's just
give me that, honestly. Yeah. Then I'm good.
It was on their recent list as part of their earnings as being a next year title. Cool. I want to check in with our listeners / viewers for a second. So we're using a platform called Yappa right now, where people can submit their yaps, look out for articles asking you for your opinion or links on our Facebook group to these listener questions. And we asked, fittingly, how do you think Nintendo will defend against the two new next-gen consoles? So let's check in with Aaron first.
Hey, MVC crew. I hope y'all are well. With your question this week, I actually don't think that Nintendo has to worry about defending against the Xbox Series X or PlayStation 5 or anything regarding the next-gen consoles, honestly. Nintendo's always been a company that can march to the beat of their own drum outside of the Wii U and that catastrophe. But specifically, when we think about the way these consoles are designed to be more of a home console, the Switch is a great complementary system for many gamers and a great entry point for many gamers that aren't necessarily interested in having the latest and greatest. There's a massive library, great exclusives, and at the end of the day, as long as they keep doing what they're doing, they'll continue to be successful. Have a good one.
Thank you, Aaron.
Yeah,
I mean, this
well said. Well said. I at the top of this conversation, when we talked about how we think Nintendo is going to compete, I was a little afraid of being reductive because my answer was essentially like, Nintendo doesn't have to compete. I don't think they've ever like really felt like they've been in competition, except for maybe back in the PlayStation 1 era. Like that was the last time that I feel like Nintendo tried to go toe to toe with anybody else. But I take particular umbrage with him saying that the Wii U was a catastrophe. I mean,
it hurt me a little bit because I still love the Wii U. I'm a Wii U apologist. I love that console. Same. The fact that you could play all your Wii games on it as well.
I completely agree with everything that you said. I thought he hit the nail on the head there.
You can love a catastrophe.
It's a good point.
From a financial perspective, certainly was that for Nintendo. Yeah. But it's really interesting. Obviously, Nintendo is in competition with everybody for dollars, right? They're in competition with some toy companies too, because not people have finite amounts of money. And but if we look at how much money is being spent on gaming this year, it certainly is up, right? So there's more and more people are playing games and are spending more on their hobby.
Nintendo especially. Like, I wonder what Animal Crossing was projected to sell versus what it sold.
Versus what it did.
Just tremendous.
It surprised everybody. So let's hear from, next we'll hear from Matt from Long Island.
Hello, Nintendo voice chat. My name is Matt from Long Island. And to answer your question, I believe Nintendo will ignore what Sony and Microsoft are doing and focus on what they've always done the last few generations, and that's focus on making new Mario, Zelda, and their other first-party titles, which people continue to jump on. It's usually their secondary console or their primary, and they have a secondary as well. Nintendo will do its own thing. They don't try and have the best graphics. They don't try and compete on their level. And they're really successful at it. Ever since the Wii, when they decided they were going to go different ways, they've been really successful at just trying to do what Nintendo does best.
There you go. More faith from Matt. Yeah. And then if we can get one more listener, Eduardo also has something to say.
Hey, guys. I think that Nintendo really doesn't need to do anything else from what they're already doing now. Because, they're offering something that their competition will never offer right now with their next-gen systems. They will definitely not do it, and that is having the comfortness of having a home console on the go. That versatility is what actually attracts people to the Switch, and it just keeps getting stronger. The general audience doesn't care about the other stuff, about 4K, 8K. They just want to play good games, and if they can play them on the go with that easy and comfortness that the Switch offers, they will do it.
Completely agree.
I agree.
We're ever allowed.
Pretty unanimous across all three of those comments, too.
Yeah. We didn't hear from anybody who said they're screwed and they need to change their ways. And obviously, seeing the sales numbers right now, it's kind of hard to make that argument.
Yeah, no, they're doing just fine.
Doing fine. So, you know, that's it for talking about Nintendo's prospects in the face of the next gen. Obviously, we're going to watch this story very closely. It's going to be interesting to see what the sales numbers will look like for the rest of the quarter. Nintendo's been doing really, really well so far. You know, some NPD data saying that in Q3, Nintendo's sales were the highest since the across all devices, consoles since the DS days. So
yeah,
and they're doing incredibly well, and it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how the new machines impact it.
But I stand by my prediction that Nintendo is going to win this holiday season, even with the next gen consoles.
So let's
set in stone.
You're absolutely right, because nobody could get the other two, but still.
Well, I mean, yeah. Technically.
We've also seen in the past, we've seen that, you know, consoles don't peak in sales in their launch quarter or month, right? The PlayStation 2 years in built up much more momentum than it ever had in the first year. So we'll definitely, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon, as they say. So let's talk a little bit about the holiday season, because we're just a couple of days away from November 27th, which is that ode to consumerism, where for whatever reason, we feel compelled to buy things that we don't really need because they're cheaper. And somehow cheaper means you're saving money, even though you
exactly.
don't.
Exactly.
That's always how I felt about it. I'm like, it doesn't count as saving money if you wouldn't have spent the money otherwise.
My wife always says, we saved $20. I'm like, no, we spent $120.
My mom's like that with clothing sales. She's like, but it was on sale. I'm like, but did you need it?
Right. So we have Seth here as an expert from our deals team. You know, he's behind a lot of the recommendations of things that you can buy for cheap. So I wanted to talk about Black Friday a little bit, because you guys said Nintendo hardly ever has sales, and they do have some sales. They already announced some early deals, or, you know, at least the retailers did, which means, you know, Nintendo's fueling them. Mm-hmm. So, Seth, what do they got for us?
Well, this year, first Best Buy came out with an ad showing that they're going to have the Mario Kart 8 Nintendo Switch bundle with 3 months of Nintendo Online for $2.99. And then Nintendo put out a press release, and that's just their Black Friday bundle. So you get Mario Kart 8, a Nintendo Switch, 3 months of Nintendo Online, $2.99. It's the exact same bundle that they do every Black Friday, only this year, it's the version 2 Switch. Last year, they offered this deal with the original Switch. They were just clearing out what they had left, I guess. And in spite of that, in spite of the fact that we made, you know, very explicitly in all everything we wrote, like, this is the older model Switch, that thing didn't last I think maybe a couple hours. It was gone completely. And I have a feeling that is going to be the case this year. This is going to be the hottest video game item that you can get.
And it's, yeah, I mean, basically it's the same price as a regular Switch. And it has the neon blue and neon red Joy-Con in it.
Yep.
So no special Mario colors or anything, but it is.
No, it's a bummer.
You're essentially getting Mario Kart for free, and then three free months.
It's completely cheaper. It's genius, because everybody knows Mario Kart, so you get that for free. And then when you're an old guy like me in an alternate universe who doesn't play games anymore, and you know does Nintendo Online, finds, oh my god, I can play Nintendo games. I can play Super Nintendo games. Okay, this is awesome. So yeah,
Mario Kart.
So with that though, there are a couple of games that are also going on sale, which is rare, and so I wanted to ask the panel here, there are three different price points, $40, $35, and $30 for Nintendo first party and kind of first party third party collaboration. So I wanted to ask everybody your picks. So the first category is games that are going to be on sale at $40, includes Link's Awakening, Luigi's Mansion 3, Super Mario Maker 2. If I only bought one of those three, which ones would you get, Zach?
Luigi's Mansion 3.
Okay.
Link's Alana, Awakening for $40 just seems so nuts. I'm going to say I absolutely love the other two, but I think that the game that I get the most value out of is Mario Maker 2. I'm still playing it frequently, and there is a lot of replayability.
Seth, yeah, that's you?
Super Mario Maker 2. Yeah, I love that game.
We're tied, folks. I'm with Zach on this. It's Luigi's Mansion 3, which is So really damn good. I love that game
phenomenal.
So much.
Phenomenal.
Next is the $35. You can get these games at Best Buy for $35. Follow the IGN Deals account on Twitter.
Yeah, please.
Links. Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Yay.
New Super Mario Bros. U Deluxe. Yoshi's Crafted World. Splatoon 2. And Mario Tennis Aces. What do you think, Zach?
I mean, anybody that's listened to this show long enough knows that my choice from this group would be Mario Tennis Aces. No, of course not. Fire Emblem. Like, Fire Emblem for sure. There's so much game in Fire Emblem for $35. That's a real value.
What do you think,
same.
Mrs. Prince?
Fire Emblem. Mm-hmm.
Seth? Yeah, I didn't like Fire Emblem. Three Houses.
It's fine. That's fine.
I was about to.
Sorry,
call
I'll
it.
Never be asked on again. But no, I would say Splatoon 2. I love that game. It's aesthetically, it's absolutely lovely. It's got great little touches. It's very stylistic, and
they keep supporting it,
and they keep supporting
they
it.
Stop. Yeah.
Hey, guess what? It's like all of a sudden, it's like it's tomatoes versus bananas. You're like, what? Okay.
Well, cool. Good news is this category is not too early to call because it's clearly the answer is Fire Emblem. All right, next one is $30 titles at GameStop. You have your choice of, and there's some third-party stuff now. Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. The Outer Worlds. Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu. Let's Go Eevee. Mm. And then Sonic Mania and Team Sonic Racing. There's a two-in-one bundle. Both games for $30. What do you think?
I mean, go with the value. You get two games in one bundle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, but then you have to play Sonic.
About. Yeah, I'm still
they're,
saying.
But they're good.
The value.
Yeah, they're good.
Hey, Sonic Mania is great. I love that game.
Look, there are a lot of Sonic games that I love, but I am going with Outer Worlds personally. I've actually not played it on the platform, so I don't know what it's like. But again, another really big, beefy RPG, a lot of fun, really creative writing. I think that game's a blast. I really, really liked it.
Yeah, the only game I don't like on the list is Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games. Okay. I didn't have a lot of fun with it. By the way, you can get it for $25 at Best Buy if you really, really want it. What do you think,
Zach? Only Olympics that we had.
That's right. Aww. Well.
Yeah, I mean, I think I actually would pick up Mario and Sonic at the Olympic Games because I think it's going to be like such a weird historical relic because that is a game that is based on an event that was canceled.
Well, it's coming back.
Yeah, Yeah, but not in 2020, you know?
2021. They'll just scratch it out. They'll put a sticker on it.
Yeah. No, I don't know. None of these games really, like, do it for me. But, yeah, as a historical relic, I think I would go
like Mario the Outer Worlds?
That's I like it on PlayStation 4, where I played it. But, like, I wouldn't recommend it on Switch.
Yeah, I can't imagine. But I have not seen gameplay. Does anyone know how well it plays?
Supposedly, I don't know about any patches or anything, but at launch it ran really rough and it looked like somebody smeared a bunch of Vaseline on it, you know?
It's playable, but it's like on a big screen TV, I didn't like the look. On the small screen, it's fine. And yeah, it has some issues, but it's definitely playable and it's a good game from the folks at Obsidian, right? Yeah, I honestly would have picked Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu.
That was my two. They're very good. They're a lot of fun, like a lot more fun than I expected, even though they are like a lot more simpler than your usual Pokemon. They're still,
well,
they're not like as childish as I was worried they would be.
And then a really great example of a remake done right also, you know,
yeah.
I think there's like a lot of quality of life stuff that's improved there. That would be a good one for $30 as well.
I want to point out, before we move on, that there will be many more games than just this. This is just what we know of for sure. There will be so many more video games on sale.
That's right.
So this keep it locked, just, IGN Deals.
That's right. This just is just shameless. What's out there. So it's been a pretty quiet week, and I think Nintendo's holding back a little bit because they don't want to scream into the storm of, you know, all the chatter around the next gen consoles. There's been, there's some small stuff. Like there's a new launch this Friday, and that's the Super Mario Brothers Game & Watch.
Yep.
Very notable for the fact that it has not gone on pre-order in the US, and it's out in like a day.
Yeah.
What is that all about? Mm.
It was weird? Being held up with FCC certification. Was the original reason why you couldn't get it. And then that seems to have cleared up. They've taken that wording out of the placeholder pages, but you still can't buy it, even though everybody wants to buy it.
I pre-ordered from Japan. Oh. Like Amazon Japan will actually ship it to the US.
Yeah.
And it's like it's in amazing. The end with shipping and exchange rate, I think what is it, like $80, Seth?
Yeah. Yep.
No, has this happened before? That something has just not been pre-orderable at this far out? Like that seems so strange. Or this soon, I guess.
It is very strange.
Hmm.
You know, they want it to be this kind of rare limited item where ordinarily would run to a store and get it, but obviously we don't do that right now.
Yeah.
When are we going to get a review of this thing?
At midnight Eastern time tonight. So 9 p.m. Pacific time, a review of this device is going live, and it's written excellently because it was written by me.
Oh, God. So all you Game & Watch fans out there, you'll wake up tomorrow morning.
Oh, boy. Rub your hands together. IGN, just three little letters. Boom, boom, boom.
Game & Watch review just for you from the great Seth Macy.
Can't wait to hear about this Super Mario Brothers game. It's the latest
thing I'm going for it. There's 35 I'm excited secrets. Did you find all 35 secrets in your review, Seth? Or?
I can't talk anything about anything
this is
other
the
than I'm
funny part yeah. in that a review of a very old game is embargoed. You can't talk about it.
I mean, if you didn't find all 35 too. Secrets, you didn't finish. Like,
anyway, and then one more little news nugget. And of course, the moment we hit stop on this recording, there'll be 100 new announcements, and Metroid Prime 5 will be out, even though 4 is not even done. So that usually happens with this show. But, you know, we heard some more data from the NPD, you know, the company that tracks retail sales and online sales nowadays too. They issued their Q3 report, and they said consumer spending on gaming hardware and content, and that includes accessories and all of that, reached a record $11.2 billion in Q3 in the United States. So that is almost up 25% over last year. And that is before the next gen consoles actually come out. So that's a pretty big milestone there, which means more people are playing games in the United States than ever before. And the leader was Switch. Switch sold more hardware units than any platform since the Nintendo DS in Q3 2009. So really big quarter. Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah,
Do you think that's going to continue?
I'm curious to see what the numbers. I'm curious to see what the numbers look like after this next gen hardware stuff, because I feel like I've spent $11,200 just in the last couple of weeks on next gen hardware. So
I figured, I think we all contributed way too much to this, especially the accessories number is. I'm very guilty for that one. So that was our look at news and what's up for Black Friday. So I wanted to quickly check in with the panel on what we're all playing. I know. You know, everybody's jonesing to get out of here and play the Xboxes and PS5s right now, but are you playing anything on the old Switch?
Well, Pikmin 3. I'm still playing that. And are you still playing Pikmin?
Yeah, I'm working my way through Pikmin 3. I'm keeping kind of quiet in this topic because I've talked about Pikmin 3 a lot on this show in the last couple of weeks, but yeah, still loving Pikmin 3. A lot of fruit.
Yeah. Such good fruit textures.
Mm-hmm. I love them. I finished it before and 100%ed it before. I might do it again. I'm in the last area now again. I'm really loving the lore, all the little writings, the notes that the four characters are leaving on five on the different creatures and stuff. It's really fun to go a little deeper. I also got Descenders on the Switch. You guys know that game? It's the downhill biking game. Yeah. Mm. It's a little rougher on Switch. Like it doesn't run quite as nicely, but you know, if you're into these challenging kind of physics based downhill racing games, it's a really fun little game as well. I'm digging it. And then I'm playing Picross 2.
Oh, shocking.
I should be going to bed, but I kind of want to just play something game, and so I finished, you know, the other Picross games, and that one I somehow never finished one of the lines of puzzles, so I'm working on that.
I have a whole gallery that I'm waiting to drop on my Switch of screen grabs. Every time Para signs on and he's playing a Picross game while I'm playing something else, I've taken a screen grab. So I'm going to drop that gallery one day.
It's my midnight game, and then but honestly, I usually fall asleep. And the switch falls out.
You drop
out of hands.
Your switch right on your face.
Boom. And then I get mad because the time says something like 30 minutes to solve the puzzle, and then I have to just restart. all right, let's talk about games out this week. I mentioned that there are 29 games coming out in the next 7 days. So Sakuna of Rice and Ruin just came out. That's a $40 game. It's made by a Japanese dev called Edelweiss. Edelweiss? Seth, Zach, can you pronounce that? Edelweiss?
Edelweiss.
Yeah, that's almost like Jaguar. it's a game inspired by ActRaiser. So the kind of like it has multiple phases. So it has like a planning kind of simulation phase and then side scrolling and hack and slash and all of that. So give it a look, watch some videos of it. It's got a cool art style. It seems to be a pretty good game. And then Fuser is finally out on the Switch. That's $60 from Harmonix. Alana, you played that a bunch, right?
Yeah, I've played a fair amount of Fuser, which for anyone who doesn't know is basically an extension of Drop Mix, which frankly maybe not everyone does know about. But good. It's a DJing game that has nothing to do with DJing whatsoever.
It's beat matching, right?
No. I mean, it's not beat matching in that it's comparable to what you do when DJing and beat matching.
Right.
But it is it's very cool tech, and I'm actually like curious how it's going to work on services like Twitch, because the songs are significantly changed. So basically it's a game where you have four records that you can drop, and say you can choose the bass line from Benny Benassi's Satisfaction and then the vocals from Childish Gambino's Summertime, and it will meld those two organically, like matching the BPM and matching the key. Cool. To create just mixes that a DJ can't even actually make, because you can't separate tracks to that extent. So you can make a lot of really cool sounding, unique stuff. That I think one of the best things about Fuser is that you could probably play Fuser at a party and actually get people dancing, because nice. it just makes almost anything sound really good, and is both very easy to play, but also gets really complicated in a way that I feel like Pokemon does, where it's something that if you just want to play it really base level and be like, I want these vocals on this song, then that's just a tap A. Sounds better if you tap A at the right time, but you only need to do it once every 30 seconds or so, so it's really not complicated. But then there is a back end to the game where you can get way more complicated and kind of make your own sounds. But I feel like it's very accessible and has a pretty solid library right now. I don't know that I feel like the game is worth $60 at this point. Like, that price point seems a little bit too high, but it's very cool tech that I think will be neat for people who just want to listen to music even during lockdown. Like, you could play music for your friends and it would be fun. There's also a multiplayer mode, like online multiplayer, so it's just like a cool little extension of everything Harmonix has already done with, obviously, like Rock Band and everything else. Mm-hmm. They're very good at doing it. It's a lot of fun. It's certainly not going to teach you how to DJ even a little bit.
Dang it. Okay, Rock Band doesn't teach you how to do Rock Band either.
Exactly. So. Singing, feels like maybe. It's worth noting. Yeah, maybe. Yep. But you can get through Rock Band just by like kind of humming a note, so questionable.
Yeah.
Well, if $60 is too much for you, there are more music-based games out. One, you know, Seth's favorite, Just Dance 2021 is hitting the Switch. Finally. And it's probably hitting the Super NES and the N64 and the GameCube and the Wii. But yeah, Just Dance, obviously, at the end of the year when you tally game sales, Just Dance is always up there. It's just such a juggernaut of a franchise.
On Amazon last year, it was in their top like 50, but the Wii version of Just Dance was like one of the best-selling games of last year. So, yeah.
It'll keep going on Switch for years too. And then there's another rhythm game called Kingdom Hearts Melody of Memory.
No, thanks.
So that's we'll have to hear from Jonathan Dornbush. He unfortunately couldn't be here. How that fits into the canon, the complicated canon of Kingdom Hearts. That's coming out on the 13th at $60. And then we've got another remaster. That's Need for Speed Hot Pursuit from EA coming out for $40 on the 13th as well. I looked at the remaster on the other consoles, and like the step up is not great. You know, it didn't change the the models and the environment much, obviously a higher resolution. So I actually think the Switch version is a pretty good choice. That was a good looking game, and it still looks pretty damn good on Switch, and it's really, really fun. So if you're looking for a racing game, there are not that many that feature cars and not carts on the Switch. I always love this game. And then next week, we also have coming up Sniper Elite 4, Serious Sam Collection is coming out. And then obviously the big one is going to be Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity, which, you know, we've all played the demo, but haven't gotten to play the final version. But somebody else at IGN has, and we'll have a review ready for that.
I don't know. Is it also you, Seth?
No, it is not. I would be a poor fit.
This is coming out of, this is being reviewed in Australia. For my IGN Australia.
Oh, g'day, mate. There you go.
I watched the Conan O'Brien travel episode to Australia yesterday. Did you see that one, Alana? Where they're trying to teach him Australian. It's so damn good.
He does a lot of good creative stuff. I like the Clueless Gamer series too. I don't know how has he done much Nintendo stuff on that? I'm not sure, but yeah, it's good stuff.
Well, I think everybody got spooked when he was playing, making fun of Final Fantasy. I think all the game publishers got a little spooked and didn't want to be part of it anymore. No, but watch his travel stuff. It's ridiculous. He goes to Japan too, and learns Japanese. And the lady who teaches him tells him that she doesn't like his face.
He does have a face.
Yeah, and he's just shocked. He's like, "How is that polite?" Anyway, so let's go. Let's go into a question block. We got a couple of questions here submitted from our friends on the NVC Facebook group and from the IGN boards. If I can indulge you guys for three questions. First question is from David Saltmarsh from the NVC Facebook group. He's asking, why do you think Nintendo has left Advance Wars behind? This is a question dear to me, of course. I feel as though it's a gold mine for multiplayer. It could be a huge hit with streaming if they did it right, with people playing against each other on custom-built maps in a turn-based game. What do you guys think? Anybody got a
Fire
Emblem viewpoint?
You think they left it behind because Fire Emblem started selling? I think that Nintendo has one huge strategy franchise already. I think that double dipping with Advance Wars would maybe be cannibalizing some of what Fire Emblem's momentum already has going for it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I would like to see the sales numbers for Advance Wars, because I think that has a lot to do with why they haven't revived it.
Mm-hmm. I just looked it up. The last one was 2008. Mm-hmm. So I feel like even that, it's like they haven't even taken a chance in a really long time for a franchise that's relatively well known. Like, it's not like the kind of thing when you ask someone on the street, you know, if they know what Advance Wars is, they're going to know. But I feel that Fire Emblem's still in that same category. It is an interesting one.
You know what it is? Nobody has their Game Boy Advance anymore. They'd have to change the name. They'd lose the brand recognition. It wouldn't make any sense.
Wasn't it originally Famicom Wars too?
Famicom Wars was the first one, yeah. And then, you know, obviously they kept Advance Wars on the on GameCube. They did Battalion Wars, which was a completely different dev and style of game. But yeah, Advance Wars is really interesting because it seems like a game where you could do a remaster or a remake by handing it to a different team and not having Intelligent Systems work on it, who are obviously really focused on Fire Emblem. But they seem to not be that into it. I mean, they didn't add any characters to Smash Brothers, and, you know, they obviously went nuts with Fire Emblem characters. So I don't know. It's just a weird story. I love those games, obviously, and we should see another one again. Next question from Ruka Scarlett from the NVC Facebook group. If there was a game designed just for you, what would the game be like? What would you do? Who would you play as? And Ruka says, personally, I'd love to see a high quality game where you play as an animal of your choice, but realistic and done well. Untitled Goose Game had a great feel, but it was satirical and graphics are not what I prefer. What do you guys think?
My answer to this has been for the last decade. Let's say Obsidian makes a Pokemon game where I get to be a Pokemon trainer and I can choose to be a gym leader. I could choose to be a breeder. I could be in a big open world, like an actual open world, first person, third person, and be catching Pokemon out in the wild. And I know there are like Skyrim mods that kind of touched on that, which I thought was really cool, but that is the dream. Nintendo is never going to do it, but that's what I would want, is just give me a Bethesda style sandbox Which I guess, you know, Obsidian not Bethesda anymore, but same thing, New Vegas too, and just put a bunch of Pokemon in it and let me do whatever I want, have a morality system. I can join Team Rocket if I want to, like Thieves Guild type stuff in Skyrim. Yeah. Like that is 100% the game I've always wanted.
I'd play that. I think if somebody, oh, go ahead, Pear.
No, I was going to say, I really like open world games, obviously, you know, Breath of the Wild. I love the Assassin's Creed, GTA, Red Dead Redemption games. And like before Red Dead came out, I would have said, I finally want a Western game. Well, now I'm at the point where I would love to see a World War II game that is like an Assassin's Creed setup where, you know, you have different villages on the map that you can free. You know, you maybe you play as a member of the French Resistance and you're taking over these, you know, the towns maybe in France somewhere. And then as you progress, you unlock better weaponry. And like in the end, you know, like you steal a tank and that's it. You know, like you're roaming the countryside in your very own tank. Like something like that would be really cool, I think.
I think for me, like I also want an open world game, but I would like an open world game with like a really robust physics system where, you know, there's like chemistry and physics systems. And also you traverse in different ways, like climbing or maybe using like a glider.
You're making a Breath of the Wild joke. As soon as you said open world physics. Like, yep. Got it.
Yeah,
yep.
You really undercut that one, Alana, but that's where I was going with it.
No, that's it for Zach. What do you got, Seth?
I mean, it's so lame, but like just make Metal Gear Solid 5, but more of it. That's the game that I want because I just love Metal Gear Solid 5, more of it, or like Red Dead Redemption 2 just again because I just love those games. They made me feel like I was in a completely different time and place with like just limitless possibilities. Yeah, I guess it's just give me an open world game where I go into the past.
Sometimes they also have a part where you like get on a unicorn.
Yes,
and give me the ability to attach balloons to people and have them
extraction system. Yeah,
all of that. Ooh. Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of balloons, for our last question, just from Nook Fan from the IGN boards. Thank you guys for participating this week. How do you guys feel about the idea of Nintendo Kart as an evolution of Mario Kart? So basically like Smash Brothers, right? Rather than just making Mario Kart 9. After guest characters were introduced in the arcade game and MK8 via DLC, it seems like the door is open for it. Would you prefer Nintendo to do the Smash approach with Mario Kart?
I mean, I think Mario Kart 8 Deluxe was sort of moving in that direction, right? Yeah. Like we got Link and we had Zelda themed courses, like the Squid Kids were in there, Animal Crossing guys were in there. The courses weren't like specifically like super engineered to look like those games except for the Zelda courses, but I think we started seeing a little bit about the F-Zero courses. We started seeing a little bit of that and like, yeah, I'm down for that. I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah, you support bring back Put Andy from Advance Wars in that one.
Drive around
just to test how excited people are before we bring it back.
Yeah, I think Mario Kart 8 is such a full featured game at this point. Like 9, they either got to go super big with courses from all the games or something, or very, very different. And like opening it up to the entire pantheon of Nintendo characters would be one way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, that's all the time we have this week. I want to first of all thank you guys for making the time to be on here, and Alana from taking your time off from not working to join us. When are we going to hear what you're doing next?
I actually get to announce on Monday, which I'm very excited about. Yeah,
very cool. Can't wait to hear what you're doing. If you want to submit questions, remember you can email us at any time at nvc@ign.com or respond to any of our threads on, you know, the IGN boards or the Nintendo Voice Chat podcast forums on Facebook. And we'll read your questions, and you can also submit your yaps via the Yappa tool at the bottom of our NVC articles. I want to thank Logan, the NVC assistant, for helping us with this show, you know, especially now that Casey is out. We're trying to continue the show and we'll be rotating hosts. And he is incredibly helpful in making sure that happens. So watch us every Thursday, you know, wherever you want to, on IGN, on YouTube, or listen to us across all these different podcast services, including Spotify. You know, that's it for this episode. We'll be back with the next episode, hopefully some impressions of Hyrule Warriors. So if you're into that, please show up for that one. Until then we're the only podcast in the world where you can
get the Jaguar.
Get the thing.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.